I've been a little distracted lately. It's almost like work restarted or something. And that has caused a lot of distractions. The thing I want to mention and talk about this morning is the idea of focus, which is one of those things that sometimes I feel I'm lacking a lot of. And it's really kind of interesting because my school has been designated what is called a focus school. And for many months, my staff that I work with and I, we've been trying to figure out what does it mean to be a focus school, because they're not real good about defining some terms like that. But one of the things that we have come to realize in terms of us being a focus school is that we get a lot more attention put on us than some other schools, which tends to make me think that some of the other schools are getting less attention than they used to, because that's the way these things work. And theoretically, what it also means is that the district is going to be more aware of our needs and are going to be better about taking care of the needs that we have. Not that I've actually seen any evidence of that. I asked for my blinds to be fixed, and they're still not fixed. It's only been like 2 months so far. You know, little things. But theoretically, there's supposed to be more assistance given to us because we're a focus school. They're focusing on us and our students and what we need and what our students need, and they're still not listening. They're just focusing. And one of the things that goes along with this is that there's also higher stakes. When people pay more attention to what you do and how you act, there's more importance given to the things that are going on. If my students do not do well at the end of this school year, they're going to say, but we tried to give you all the help we could. And I might have a couple of choice responses for that. But, you know, that's part of the idea here, is that the stakes are higher because there's more attention on these things. Many years ago, when I first started being a teacher, there was a man, and he was, at the time he was vice principal of the school I was at, now he's vice principal at a different school, and he mentioned to me that normal human attention span is not very long. I mean, you're talking like 30 seconds. And at the time when he was telling me this, he says, and we'd already been talking for several minutes, he says, and your attention has already wandered from things that I've said like 6 times. And I couldn't tell him that no, it hadn't, because it had. Josh is trying to figure that out. 6 times in 5 minutes. I'm not a normal human, it's okay. But normal human concentration, we are not able to concentrate on things for very long. Now, I think that in part this has been a shift as our culture has shifted. As we have become a TV-focused generation, that has affected our attention spans. We've done this to ourselves. You watch a commercial, and a commercial is 15, 20 seconds, because that's how much time they expect us to actually pay attention for. But you watch a movie, a TV show, any of these things, and if they don't change the scene in some way in about 7 seconds, then it's not considered to be a high-end production. They're constantly changing the point of view on us. They're constantly changing what you're looking at about every 7 seconds, because that's about what they expect the average person to be able to do, is about 7 seconds before they lose your attention. Now, real quick, let's take a quick poll of the audience. How many of you are still focused? Please raise your hand. And I want you to notice how many don't. Okay? I won't hold it against Dennis. He just doesn't like to raise his hand. But it's easy for us to see that we quickly lose attention and are distracted by the things around us. Those of us who are parents, our kids are distractions. All the time. They can't help it. Even when they're sitting there being good, they're still a distraction. Because they're our children and we are responsible for them and we know it. And so, automatically, we occasionally have to wonder, are they doing exactly what they're supposed to be doing? There was a video that was played for my school a couple weeks ago now. And we as a staff were said, all right, we want you to watch these people, they're doing this dance. And I want you to tell me how many times the people in white shirts spin. Okay, that's the entire thing. Tell us how many times they spin. Just the people in white shirts, that's all you care about. And so as we're watching this video of these people in these shirts spinning, there's some in black shirts, there's some in white shirts, this person in a gorilla suit walks onto the screen, does a couple jumping jacks, right in the very center, and then walks off on the other side. And so then they finish the video, and so, all right, so how many times did the people in white shirts spin? The answer was 15, just in case you're curious. I only counted 14. I was off by one. I felt bad about that. And then the person who was in charge of this presentation said, now, how many of you noticed the gorilla? And I raised my hand because I noticed the gorilla. Only like 3 people raised their hands having noticed the gorilla. This is a room full of teachers. Our job is to notice things the students are doing all the time, and only 3 people noticed the gorilla. Because that's the other part of focus. On the one hand, it's easy for us to lose our focus. On the other hand, when you focus on something, you tend not to notice anything else. We knew at that moment what it was that we were supposed to be focused on. And we did. Still, the gorilla distracted me, so I only counted 14 instead of 15. Because I lost my focus. You know, this is the way that our brains and our minds work. The truth is, though, and I've been talking about teachers and teaching, this applies to every group of people who have a goal. As Christians, we have a goal. And we need to focus on our goal. We need to be goal-oriented. As Christians, we need to think about, what do we want? How do we get it? And in this way, that's very similar to teaching. And what should our goal be? That's an important question that we have to think about. The truth is, as Christians, our goal is not here and now. Our goal is eternity. Our focus should be on the eternal. Not the here and now, but the eternal. And then the question that we have to ask is, how do we get to our goal, and how will we know when we get there? So let's take a moment and let's think about some of these questions. And first, this idea of where our goal should be. Matthew chapter 6, verses 19 through 21. Matthew 6, 19 through 21. Do not lay up for yourselves treasure on earth, where moth and rust destroy, and where thieves break in and steal. But lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroys, and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. My wife and I had an interesting experience this morning. We got out to our car. We've got all the kids in the car. My wife is coming out of the house, making sure the door is locked. I'm sitting in the car with all the kids. And I look over to check on my wife, and this guy starts walking around the corner of the house. Some random guy, never seen him before. So what do? I get out of the car to go greet him. Because what's my first thought? My first thought isn't, we have some poor lost soul. Because the first question is how did he get into my yard to begin with? And the second question is why is he there? And my thought immediately goes to, is this guy scoping out my house? I don't know why he'd scope out mine out of the entire neighborhood, but that's a whole nother topic. And so the guy comes up, he's like, I'm very sorry. And he explains to me that in not necessarily the most cohesive terms, that he got lost in the trailer park, and it's the only way he could figure out to get out was to climb the gate between them and us. And this guy had lost his focus at some point in time, and it wasn't very good. I watched him walk all the way down the street because I directed him to the Get Bus stop. And as we were driving this way, he was pretty far down Roseville Highway. But, my first thought was not, this is some guy in need of help. It was, why is this guy in my yard? And my thought was on this passage. Do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth. I have had many treasures of my own get destroyed. Not necessarily by moth and rust. Sometimes it's by children. Sometimes it's by animals. Sometimes it's by someone leaving it out in my yard so it can get rained on, which could be rust, but isn't always. These are things that happen in this world. And so what we need to think about, what we need to focus on, is where these things don't happen. Where are our treasures being laid up? Our treasures need to be in heaven, because where our treasure is, that's where our heart is going to be. Now, of late, I have read a variety of things that are talking about the idea of heaven and what it's going to be like there. And I've actually had people say that, you know, if this is all heaven is, I don't want to go there. And their depiction of heaven comes out of those old cartoons where you've got Tweety and Sylvester dies, and so where do you find him? He's sitting on a cloud with the white robe on, and he's got wings, and he's strumming a harp, and that's all he's doing. And that's their conception of what heaven is. And I feel so sorry that that's all their conception of heaven is, because heaven is not just sitting on a cloud strumming a harp. That's, you know, I've never learned to play a musical instrument, so that'll be a good trick to begin with. But if we go and we look at some of the other ideas of what heaven is, Revelation chapter 19, verses 6 through 9. Revelation 19, 6 through 9. Then I heard what seemed to be the voice of a great multitude, like the roar of many waters, and like the sound of mighty peals of thunder, crying out, "Hallelujah! For the Lord our God, the Almighty, reigns. Let us rejoice and exult and give him the glory, for the marriage of the Lamb has come, and his bride has made herself ready. It was granted her to clothe herself with fine linen, pure and bright, for the fine linen is the righteous deeds of the saint." And the angel said to me, "Write this, blessed are those who are invited to the marriage supper of the Lamb." And he said to me, "These are the true words of God." In my life, I've been to several marriage feasts, and some of them have been true feasts in every sense of that word. Some of them had a lot more entertainment involved in them than I really thought was necessary, but when you really think about it, one of the happiest places for people to be isn't Disneyland. That's not the happiest place on earth. But right after a wedding, when everybody is there celebrating this joyous occasion, and everybody is eating, everybody's playing around, and table seven's gonna have a great deal of fun. You know, playing around with everything around them. Okay? And this is a great time and place to be, where what you have is the best food people have available to offer. What you have is the best entertainment that people can come up with. Where you're sitting around talking to people who have this great thing in common of knowing the bride and groom. And if you're really lucky, you get seated with your friends, so, you know, it's even better. And that is a depiction of heaven. This time where the Lamb and the bride are married, and it's not just the happiness of the guests. We have the happiness of the bride who has just married the love of her life. The one who was willing to give himself up for her and die for her. That is the happiness that we're going to have when we're in heaven. That's the kind of experiences that we're going to have. And that's far from the only one. This is one of the depictions of heaven and what it's going to be like. Jesus used the very same idea in talking about heaven, this idea of a wedding feast. But there's also this idea that in the book of Ezekiel, people are going to be fishing, for those who like to fish. There's going to be trees that are going to be growing food that we can pick. There's going to be people doing things, all sorts of things are going to be happening there. And we don't know everything that's going to happen there, because all of these things are a mere shadow of what heaven really is. It's going to be so much better than any of this. But nowhere, at no time, is heaven ever depicted as being boring. There will be singing. There will be parties. There's going to be responsibilities. There's going to be people there that we want to talk to. I'm willing to think that there's even going to be a time and a place for us to play board games. Because that's fun. And those are things that I want to do. And I'm sure that God has included that kind of an idea in what heaven's going to be, because he wants us to enjoy ourselves. He wants us to have fun in his presence and to have fun with him, because he will be in our presence. And that is the best thing of all. And there was a song that I heard recently when I was riding along with my father from the movie Fiddler on the Roof, or from the play Fiddler on the Roof, depending on which one you really wanted. If I were a rich man. And throughout the entire song, he's talking about all of these great things that he would do if he were as a rich man. He'd have one long staircase going up and one even longer coming down. And as he sings about the house, I always picture the Winchester house up in the San Jose area. Because that's the kind of thing that she did because she was rich. She was also afraid of ghosts. But, you know, and he goes through all this. But then he says that the greatest thing of all would be the ability to sit there and study the holy book 7 hours every day. That would be the greatest thing of all. And that is the epitome of the idea here. The idea that when we get to heaven, we're going to have all the time to study God's word that we want. Even better, all the time to study He who gave it to us that we want. Because I have a feeling that learning everything there is about God is going to take us an eternity. And this brings us to an idea of what is our goal and how do we get there. In Philippians chapter 4, verses 8 through 9, we have the goal. How do we get there? Philippians 4, 8 through 9, Paul writes, "Finally, brothers, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is commendable, if there is any excellence, if there is anything worthy of praise, think about these things. What you have learned and received and heard and seen in me, practice these things, and the God of peace will be with you." Sometimes we'll go out and we'll do entertainment here in this world. Go out and see movies. Now, if my brother Josh goes and sees a movie, you can be guaranteed it's going to be a negative review. He doesn't focus on what's good in the movie. Sometimes he does. But Paul says here, whatever is good, whatever is pure, whatever is right, whatever is noble, whatever is commendable, think about these things. Is he talking about movies here? And the answer to this is no. And we should be aware of the fact that that's really not what he's talking about here. But I've heard these verses used in that kind of way. And so I kind of wanted to bring it up and use Josh as a little bit of humor there. But when he says these things, what are the things that we're supposed to focus on? What are these things that are pure and noble and right and worthy of praise and commendable and all of these great things? Where do we find these things? Because I'll tell you, these are not the things that we find in movies. These are not the things that we find in most of the books that we read. I enjoy reading a lot. I enjoy watching movies. There's a lot of things that I enjoy that these verses aren't necessarily the things that they're really talking about. A lot of people will take these and they will say, focus on the good in whatever's going on. Well, I'm going to remind you. Eve looked at the tree of good knowledge, good and evil. She saw the fruit. And she focused on the good. She looked and she says, it looks good. It's desirable for gaining wisdom. And she didn't focus enough on why it was the wrong thing to do, which is what she should have focused on. So we don't want to take this and just say, always focus only on the good, because remember, we do have to also keep out the bad. So instead, what should we focus on? If we want to get to eternity, what do we need to focus on? Hebrews chapter 12, verses 1 through 3. "Therefore, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us also lay aside every weight and sin which clings so closely, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking to Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is seated at the right hand of the throne of God. Consider him who endures from sinners such hostility against himself, so that you may not grow weary or faint-hearted." And there we have the first thing that we need to focus on. Jesus Christ and Him crucified. If there is anything that is pure, noble, and commendable, it is Him who was willing to give up heaven to come and die for us. He who is willing to not consider equality with God something to be grasped, but instead emptied Himself so that He could die for our sins, who lived a pure and sinless life so that He could die for us, so that we could get that invitation to the wedding supper. That is indeed the thing that we should focus on first and foremost, the life He lived and how He desires for us to live. He is everything that Paul told us to focus on in back there in the book of Philippians. He is the one that we should focus on. Because if we can live our lives to be like Him, then at the resurrection, we will be like Him. 1 Corinthians 15 talks about this idea that we will be like Him. The book of Hebrews, in the second chapter, says we will be like Him. He is that goal for us for eternity. We will be like Him. We will all be changed in the twinkling of an eye when the last trumpet sounds. And what we will be is like Him. But there is, of course, the second part of this, because I want us to remember that focus works multiple ways. We focus on Jesus. But we need to be careful that we don't miss the gorilla. In Deuteronomy chapter 4, verses 9 and 10, a passage that should be familiar to those who were here on Wednesday, Deuteronomy 4, 9 and 10, "Only take care and keep your soul diligently, lest you forget the things that your eyes have seen, and lest they depart from your heart all the days of your life. Make them known to your children and your children's children, how on the day that you stood before the Lord your God at Horeb, the Lord said to me, 'Gather the people to me, that I may let them hear my words, so that they may learn to fear me all the days they live on the earth, and that they may teach their children so.'" And God says here, and He says this to the children of Israel, they need to remember. And what is it they need to remember? All the words that He had spoken to them. That law that He had given to them. They need to remember it. And more than that, they needed to also pass it on to their children so that their children would remember it. Now, we know the story of the Israelites. We know that's not an easy thing. You know, we talk about the idea that for the Israelites, you had a generation who did really well all of the life of Joshua. And then the following generation, they didn't do so well. And then you'd get a judge and they'd do well. And then they wouldn't do well. And we have this cycle thing going on there throughout the entire book of Judges, and then through the entire set of Kings, where they do well and then they don't. They do well and then they don't. Because it's hard to pass on the memory of what God has done for us. People need to be able to have the focus so that they can know what God has done for them in their lives. And sometimes it's hard for us to remember what God has done for us. But as Moses said here, it's very important that we remember what it is that God has done for us so that we can then remember His words. Even still to this day, we need to continue to remember His words. If we jump over to the book of Malachi, Malachi chapter 1 verse 13, "But you say, 'What a weariness this is,' and you snort at it, says the Lord of hosts. You bring what has been taken by violence, or is lame or sick, and this you bring as your offering. Shall I accept that from your hand?" says the Lord. And this is just part of what's going on there. God is telling them, you're not acting the right way when it comes to the sacrifices you're giving to me. When it comes to the life that you are living, children of God, you're not living the life that is worthy of Him and what He has done for you. And so as children of God today, the Israelites in the days of Malachi, they weren't there. Their attitude was apart. Their attitude was different from what it ought to have been. And sometimes it's really easy for us to forget that attitude is still important to us today. How do we go about taking the Lord's Supper? How do we go about with the collection that we do? Attitude is important. Do we look at that and say, what a weariness this is? Why do I have to come to church every single Sunday? Every week I got to do this. That's so tiring. I'm so tired. Do I really need to go? Attitude is important. And we need to make sure that we have the right attitude. So instead, what is the attitude that we ought to have? Psalms 1, verses 1 and 2. Blessed is the man who walks not in the counsel of the wicked, nor stands in the way of sinners, nor sits in the seat of scoffers. But his delight is in the law of the Lord, and on his law he meditates day and night. How much time do we spend delighting in the law of the Lord? Meditating on it. Do we do it day and night? Is it one of those things that's ever before us that we think about it? Or would we rather walk in the counsel of the wicked and stand in the way of sinners? Sit in the seat of scoffers? It's really easy to be a scoffer. Working with middle school students, they sometimes say things they shouldn't. And things pop into my head and to respond to them that I just shouldn't say. Because it's easy to come up with responses to things that put people down. It's easy to be insulting. It's easy to think that I should live my life the way I want to. Those are all easy things. But that's exactly what the psalmist here is saying, is that blessed is the man who does not do those things, but instead delights in the law of the Lord. This goes back to what Moses told the people. They needed to remember what God had done for them, remember the words that God had given to them. And we still need to do those things. Now, I'll tell you honestly, the majority of the people in this room probably know more about the Bible than many of the people that you'll meet as you walk through life. And I'm glad of that. I'm glad that we have put forth effort and study and learning. The only question is, are we done? My students will sometimes come up to me and say, Mr. Fry, we're done learning math. Go figure. But this is a math class, so guess what you're going to be doing? You're still going to be learning math. In the same way, here in our lives, here and now, we're still learning. We are still children of God. We still have lessons to learn. We still have things to do. And the day that I stop learning, well, usually I tell my students, the day I stop learning is the day I die. But as I was doing this lesson, I realized I won't be done learning then. I'm still going to be learning, even after I die. As I stand before my Father in heaven, there's still so much more for me to know. Still so much more for me to do. Still so much of my life to live. Because so much more of my life is still left before me, even after I die. That which happens here in this world is but a flash in the pan. That which stands before us in eternity, that's going to last forever. And how much better that is going to be. Matthew chapter 24, verses 42 through 44. Jesus says, therefore stay awake, for you do not know on what day your Lord is coming. But know this, that if the master of the house had known in what part of the night the thief was coming, he would have stayed awake and would not have let his house be broken into. Therefore you also must be ready, for the Son of Man is coming at an hour you do not expect. Our lives are full of things that we never expect to have happen. Things that we cannot anticipate. Things that we cannot hope to anticipate. And yet, we're somehow expected to meet every single one of them. And usually, if we don't anticipate something happening, we fail at it miserably. Not always. Sometimes our entire life has been training for that moment. But there's one thing that we know is going to happen. There's one thing that we know we can anticipate. We don't know exactly when, but we know Jesus is coming again. His return is for certain. It's going to happen. We can anticipate it. Are we ready? Are we awake, as Jesus says here, waiting for the thief to come in the night? Jesus is coming soon. We do not know the day nor the hour, but we know how to be ready. If we live the way that Jesus desires us to live, if we spend our time studying the Word, if we are willing to put in the effort to be ready for Him, we will be ready whenever He comes. Whether it be in the next 5 minutes, the next 5 days, the next 5,000 years, we'll be ready when He comes if we're willing to put in the effort for it and maintain our focus.